Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to coast, This Week in America. The delightful children's book, The Adventures of Goldilocks and the Baby Bear, What Happened Next by Linda Heppner, sequel stories to the original Goldilocks story. She and Baby Bear, soon to be called Little Bear, are five, become close friends and have adventures. Characters besides their families and community are wild animals and forest trees. Each character has personality, and each story ends happily, with enough adventure and mishaps for young, imaginative children, opening even adults' eyes to nature and friendships. Linda has been writing since childhood. Some poems have been found online and published, but most of her stories have been verbal, made up on the spot for children and adult amusement. Linda grew up in England. These are some stories inspired by her early life with her cousins, country walks she took with her imaginative father. These stories are only a handful of the many that she has told to each of her American children and grandchildren. These are true stories in a way, and so are the creatures who reenact some of the scenes from her life. Linda Heppner, author of The Adventures of Goldilocks and Baby Bear, What Happened Next, our guest on This Week in America. Linda, welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us.
It's very nice to meet you, Rick.
I love what you've done with this story, and we'll talk about in depth that as we go and how you came up with this idea. But let's start with sort of a variation of that. What inspired you to write the book? Where did this come from, The Adventures of Goldilocks and Baby Bear?
Well, like all mothers and grandmothers, you tell fairy tales to your small children. And one in particular, his name is Amitai, kept asking for Goldilocks and Baby Bear. I told it and told it and told it until I thought, let's expand this thing. And the characters actually took on a life of their own. There were more and more characters. The village that they lived in became very real to me and to him. We would sit for hours on the sofa or in the car or wherever we were. And I would invent and invent and invent. I must have told dozens and dozens of stories. then he turned about five, six, and his little sister was born. And all of a sudden, things changed. And he wanted something much more adventurous, which I fully understood. It was very interesting. Meanwhile, he was nagging me to publish my stories, and I kept putting it off, and then finally I put six of them together and retold them in my own way, and this is the result.
And the result is doing so well. Rave reviews for The Adventures of Goldilocks and Baby Bear, What Happened Next by Linda Heppner, H-E-P-N-E-R. Book available wherever books are sold. Link to Amazon on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Let's start with reimagining Goldilocks. Where did the Goldilocks idea come from? And I love what you do with her. Many people describe her as spunky. I mean, you've really taken this character and brought her to life in a modern sense. We love Goldilocks. How did this whole thing develop with Goldilocks and how you portray her in the story?
Well, I'm really glad that you like Goldilocks. She really developed on her own, as all my characters do and did. I think that what I was doing was thinking about my very early life. I grew up in England. There was a war going on. And between the bombs of London and the countryside or having being sent away, like many children, my family got a little cottage in the country. And I and my cousins and my aunts filled up this little cottage. And my older cousin would drag me around the village. I got up to all sorts of mischief with him. I was their little mascot. So to me, he was Goldilocks. not at all a Goldilocks type of person. He's not feminine at all, but he was mischievous and full of ideas and fun. And I trotted around after him and his other wicked little friends. And so I suppose I was Baby Bear. And then at about the age of six, when we had to give up that cottage, I think I became Little Bear. and so on. So really, it was him. He turned into a very model citizen, I have to tell you that.
I love that, how this background portrays, works its way into the story as you portray Goldilocks and Baby Bear. It becomes Little Bear. The book is available wherever books are sold, The Adventures of Goldilocks and Baby Bear. I mentioned you've been writing poetry. You've had stories that you've written before, but not published. Any regrets about not publishing? And are you ready to publish again? I mean, people love what you've done with Goldilocks.
Well, my problem is always that I love writing, and I can sit down and write and tell stories and write poetry. But then getting it organized is my weak point. And the poems that I've had published have mainly just been found by other people online, and for whatever uses they've used them. So that was very gratifying. But the stories haven't really been discovered in the same way. And I've just been too busy. My life has been very fulfilling and creative. And the getting round to publishing, to contacting people, to filling up forms, and now everything online seems to be so much trouble that I'd just really rather be creative. If somebody came along, as URL did, and took my hand and said, we could interview you and things like that, then it would have been much easier.
You know, that's interesting. There's the creative part, which you've conquered, and then there's this whole business and technical part of it. You know, once you write it, that's just the beginning. You need to get it out there and people to understand it. You need to get it written in a form that they can publish, and the editing and all of that. There's so much more than just the creative part of it. You have this knack for really understanding the thought process of a child, of little people. Does that come from memories of your time and growing up with you and the cousins? Is you really, sometimes adults, we lose sort of sight of what kids go through, and we think we know, but we really don't know, or we've forgotten. You seem to be able to tap into that. Is that from your childhood?
I'm sure it must be from my childhood, but also from teaching all my life and having a family of my own. I think today there is so much trouble in the world and things move so fast that there is a real need not to send children out and to face the problems that we will have to face eventually. They need a lot of comfort. They need to be absolutely sure that they have a home to go to after their adventures, that friendships are solid and so on, whilst making judgments. I'm not saying they shouldn't have adventures, because I depict them here. They're little adventures.
Yes.
You have children and you do whatever you can for them, and then you send them out to play. You don't hover over them. You let them go and explore. But somewhere at the back, you are watching. And I think this is what I subconsciously try to convey in my book, is that there is a safe world for these little children. There's time enough to realize that there are terrible problems to be sorted out. And I think that probably comes at different times for different children. Children who have problems, I think, need to be comforted, have somewhere to escape from. And children who don't have problems yet really do not need to be faced with them yet. So I think this is what's come out, but I think it was a subconscious thing, probably from my own childhood, where my family really tried to protect me from the dreadful things that were happening around. And I really appreciated that. And I suppose I'd like to go back to that in a way. And I hope that I hope that security is there basically for children. This is what I've tried to convey in the book. The adventures today, people would rush out and rescue their children, say you can't go out in the street by yourself, you can't go exploring in the woods by yourself, and so on and so forth. I think that's a shame. So I've tried to remedy that, if like, in the stories. But it's really the characters. They dictated the story.
Well, they all come alive. We're talking with Linda Heppner about her book, The Adventures of Goldilocks and Baby Bear, What Happened Next? That calmness that you talk about, that sense of optimism and well-being for young people, it's good for adults, too. And as adults, as we're reading these stories, there's something there for us, too, isn't there? Not just a message for the child. If we're listening to what we're reading, there are messages there for us.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think if I'm typical, then I think you are right there. Though, of course, I do love a good adventure. I love all sorts of reading, and I like to hear about the things that have happened, and also how they're solved, if they can be solved.
Yes.
But I think that the way that I've written this story is not in a simplistic fashion. The one or two times when I've written in a simplistic fashion, I wish that I hadn't, but I've done it now. I feel that it should be an adult or an older child reading these stories to the children, because then they hear the voice behind it, and also you have less need of constantly to be looking at pictures and turning the page, which seems to be what most children's books are today. I suppose in a way my book is a little old-fashioned, the way that books were when you and I were tiny, perhaps. But I haven't done that. The illustrator whom I asked to illustrate the book is a friend of mine, a very, very talented artist. And if I redid the book, I think what I would do is to split up little bits of the pictures, they were paintings of hers, and put one on every page. But that's not how I was thinking when I wrote the story and had it published. I was thinking of it being read aloud. You know, and I'd love to read it aloud, actually, as a video book.
Now that I would like that. You've talked about, you know, reading it and the response that you get, and adults who read it and the response they get. And you mentioned that it's sort of like the old books that we grew up reading as we were kids. And so many have compared it to a classical piece of children's literature, which we don't have anymore. And I think that's that's a real compliment with the way that you've presented this book.
Thank you.
Is The Adventures of Goldilocks and Baby Bear, What Happened Next? Talk a little bit about your background, your jobs, where you live, the people you've met, and the influence they've had on you as a writer. It sounds like all of this has been put in a pool somewhere, and you go back and you take a little out as you a warehouse somewhere. You go back and you get a little bit of your background that comes across in the writing. Is that accurate?
I think what you say is right. It's a huge subject, so where to start, I don't know. As I say, I grew up in England. My early years were spent during the war. Then things calmed down. I grew up just outside Croydon, basically just outside London. It was basically London. As I grew up, I fell in love with the language of French, and I used to spend my vacations with friends in France all the time. That was the adventurous side of my growing up. I went to a really good school and read good literature, and then went to college in London, and then after that began teaching. I taught French all my life until we came to America. I married and came to America and basically taught English in different schools and had a family. So it's been a very, very busy life.
Well, a rewarding life, and it's reflected in Linda's book, The Adventures of Goldilocks and Baby Bear, What Happened Next? I love that, What Happened Next? There's so many possibilities out there for other children's stories. We wonder, okay, how it ended. And so many people have said, I love Goldilocks. And nobody else has really done anything like this before. Will you be doing any more What Happened Next, going back to some of these childhood stories and maybe freshening them up for our time?
It's funny, because the other day I opened up my journal, And I noted that I had something funny had happened when I was sitting on the sofa, and something about Goldilocks blowing up balloons, and we were laughing so much that we thought we'd explode. So there must be dozens of stories there, but to tell you the truth, I've forgotten so many I could recreate. What happened when my grandson turned 5.5, 6 was that I did start expanding that. He, don't laugh, but at that point, he wanted something a little bit more wicked. And he froze, he told me to freeze the entire family, not just the family, the village, and to enter the world of witches. And those are the stories that I've had in my head ever since, is the possibility of becoming more fantastical and working out the problems that he was having when his little sister, whom he loves, was born, by basically freezing off the entire family and adopting a family of witches instead. There are a lot of ideas out there. It's a question of my sitting down and getting on with it, and then contacting either Dorrance, who published this very beautifully, or URL, who really hold my hand and assure me that I can do all of this online stuff.
It sounds like your grandson is taking after grandmother. These stories and things are going on in his mind. Now, this book was dedicated to him, correct?
Yes, to him and to basically to him and to my cousin, who is now an old man and retired,
yeah,
and who ran a school, actually, a wonderful school when he grew up. Yes, and also, of course, to my family.
Yes, and I saw an interview that was done recently at the L.A. Book Fair. This is one of the largest in the country. I think it may be the largest outdoor book fair in the country. And the response that you were getting and the joy that you had of being there with family and being there with the books. And you said something that's really interesting. You love that concept because it's like strolling through a museum. And I'm thinking about if you go to an old bookstore, if anybody remembers what a bookstore is, you could sort of stroll through there. And these are all like pieces of art, the different books that you come across. I love that analogy. What was it like for you, an author at the book fair, and see all these people? We hear that books are really not doing that well anymore. People are not interested in books. They're not buying the actual books. You saw thousands of people who buy books. What was that like for you being at the book fair?
Well, it was exciting. It was actually the first book fair I've ever been to. And I went because the book was there, and it was actually very thrilling. It was fun to see all of these authors in there at their tables, and some of them were really prolific, and the artists and people promoting the books. It was very joyous. I'd definitely go again. It was really, really wonderful. I did notice that people were very anxious to pick up books for free, but whether or not they went ahead and actually bought them, I don't know. But the main thing is that people should be reading and not depending constantly on pictures, which are wonderful. And I love painting myself. I tried actually illustrating this book myself, but I enjoyed it, but I'm not consistent. Whereas my friend Barbara Mendes is a professional, and she was able to replicate the characters in each of the illustrations.
She did.
But the book fair was wonderful. Yeah.
Barbara did an excellent job, and you can tell you have this association with her. Sometimes you see books that are illustrated by some freelancer that really has no idea what the author is attempting to do, and it's sort of fighting what the text is. And in this case, it's really enhancing the words, the text that you have in the book. I mentioned Journeys with Your Imaginative Father. Talk about that and the role of a parent in sparking imagination and creativity in young people. Obviously, that was a very important part of your childhood, was sharing time with him, and he's sharing his storytelling with you.
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. My mother had one story. It was The Black Tulip. I think it was a movie that was made when she was young. She would tell that again and again. But my father actually invented stories, when I come to think of it. he invented a character, I think, called Jack, and I complained and I said, no, I want a girl. So he made her Jill or something. And he embroidered on this every night when he came in to tuck me up. I suppose I hadn't actually thought about that, but I think that must have made a big impression on me. I don't exactly remember what happened now, but that must have been something.
Well, you remember the interaction, and I think that's so important that you had that part of your nurturing as you were growing up. Linda, the time has gone by so quickly. This has been really a fun conversation. I really enjoyed you having you on the program. What are you working on next? You mentioned a couple ideas that you're working on. Are you close to anything? Are you doing any poetry?
Yes, I'm still doing poetry. I do it constantly. It's erratic because there could be weeks go by and then I'll sit down and write three and so on. I never know where my inspiration is going to come from. Sometimes it's words, sometimes it's something I've noticed. Something bubbles up, and I just obey that impulse, really. My latest poem, I can't quite recall at the moment, but that was a long one, I'd have to go back and have to look.
Well, it's interesting.
That's
You
it's rather an unconscious sort of business,
well,
and
yes. And you talked before about going to your journal and you had something written there. How important is it for maybe for all of us to have a journal, creative people in particular, as you log things? Because you get to that age, you think, I can remember this, and you can't remember that 2 days later. So it's nice to have it written down. How important is journaling to you?
Well, it was very important. A friend of my parents gave me a journal to write in when it was the new year before I turned 14, and I just filled up reams and reams of it to the point where friends would say, "Stop writing and come and play." And I really continued it for several years. Then dropped it when I was at university because I was really very busy. I was acting and writing and doing my exams and running around and dating boys, of course. And then I met my husband, and so that took up a lot of time. But I took it up again after I had children. Usually, when we were driving around, I would sit in the passenger seat and write about whatever was happening. It's just the need to write. If you want to, if you have that need to write, you just have to be writing. And this is really what I was doing. Then you come away and you have all sorts of memories of what happened, what you did. Then you go back and you read and you say, well, I didn't remember that, or it was quite different from
Yes.
what I remembered. It's a very interesting process. And the things that you leave out are even more interesting.
That you have under lock and key, that you have at the back of the journal, that not every there's no public access to that. You also said within the 30 seconds here, something comes bubbling up. How important is it to listen to that voice that bubbles up? And do so many of us really don't pay attention to that? I hear creative people talk all the time that they may not have an idea, but something comes to them rather than spending 3 days of trying to chase that idea. If you relax a little bit, get calm, it will come to you. How important is it to listen and watch for the bubbling up?
I think it's very important. It's a hook, really.
Yes.
I'm not a professional writer, so I don't have to sit down every day as I did when I was studying. You had to write. But as my life has unfolded, I find that when the words start to come into your head and you stop and you say, I need to get that down, then it starts to unfold. Sometimes it could be a line of a poem, it could be just an image, but then you have to sit down and you have to deal with it. You need to give yourself time. And you need also to be to feel fairly refreshed. The problem with women all their lives, they've been incredibly busy,
Yes.
and anybody who is does not give themselves the time, the moment to sit down and get the thing down on paper is missing out, because so much can develop from, for instance, from a phrase that just comes into your head. You just have to improvise and to play with it. I don't know if I answered your question, but
No,
you think you.
you did, and I appreciate that because so often we really just go through life and we don't stop and pick up the signs, and we don't trust our heart when we're being led in a certain way where we want to go.
Right.
We do maybe too rational at times. Linda, the time has gone by so quickly. Our guest has been Linda Heppner. That's HEP as in Paul, NER. This book, The Adventures of Goldilocks and Baby Bear, What Happened Next? People have said this belongs in libraries. Buy it for that. Buy it for young people, for gifts. Baby, take it, get it in the community. It's really well done. Such a pleasure to have Linda with us on the program. Thank you so much for being with us on the program.
It was lovely talking with you, Rick.
A
Thank
pleasure
you.
to have you here. And once again, the books, The Adventures of Goldilocks and the Baby Bear, What Happened Next? Linda Heppner, our guest on the program. And I thank you, our Link Publishing, for arranging our conversation today. All this, by the way, and a link to Amazon page for Linda by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. We are back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.